The Making of Donald Trump. Author, David Say Johnston. For the past 30 years, I've been following Trump intensely. I've paid close attention to his business dealings, and I've interviewed him multiple times. This book is my effort to make sure Americans know a fuller story about Trump than the one he has polished and promoted with such exceptional skills and determination. More importantly, Trump has worked just as hard to make sure few people know about his lifelong entanglements with a major cocaine trafficker, mobsters, swindlers, and many mob associates. His family. The Trump's family's deep roots stretch to the 17th century in Germany, when the father fled Germany for the United States. Fred Trump, Donald's father, entered his majority by getting himself arrested at age 21 for his involvement in a battle between about 100 New York police officers and 1,000 Ku Klux Klan members and supporters. It was the first of many indications of Trump's racial enmity. During World War II, Fred landed government contracts for apartments and barracks to be built. Fred had become a main target of federal investigators looking into profiteering with the tax dollars intended to help World War II veterans. The subsequent Senate hearings about those investigations were about fortunes Trump and other builders made by gaming Federal Housing Administration rules on mortgage guarantees. Fred testified before Congress that the reasons he had nearly $4 million in the bank were lower costs for materials than he had expected, and the fact that he acted as his own contractor. Fred then did his best to turn tables, attacking the investigators for doing untold damage to my standing reputation. In 2005, in a motivational talk, Donald J. Trump's two recommendations on how to succeed in life and business were: first, trust no one, especially good employees. Be paranoid, because they're going to try to fleece you. Second, Trump recommended revenge as a business policy. Get even if somebody screws you. You screw them back 10 times over. At least you can feel good about it. 16 pages of his book, Think Big, are devoted to revenge. Making friends. One of Trump's first and most important connections was with the notorious attorney, Roy Cohn. Trump hired Cohn to sue the federal government. In the summer of 1972, the federal government investigated claims of racial bias involving a number of his apartments in Brooklyn. The Trumps didn't rent to African Americans, Puerto Ricans, and others not considered white. The Justice Department sued Trump for refusing to rent dwellings to persons because of race and color. When Donald sought advice from Cohn, Cohn said, "Let them prove that you discriminated." Cohn filed a lawsuit demanding $100 million in damages from the federal government. This marked a key moment in Trump's career, adopting the tactic hitting harder when he feels attacked. The Great Lawsuit. Erecting gaudy buildings didn't bring Trump the national attention he craved. It was football that made him famous. Trump's foray into professional football provides an early example of a business career built on breaking and ignoring rules. In 1983, Trump bought the New Jersey Generals, one of a dozen teams in the nascent United States Football League. The USFL drew decent crowds, but nothing like the National Football League, which took in about $1 billion at the gate of that year, and another $2.1 billion from network television broadcasts. Serial sports entrepreneur David Dixon and other USFL founders had started the league as a way for people not rich enough to buy an NFL team to invest in commercial sports. Trump initially said he paid $9 million for the Generals. He later claimed $5 million. Both the ABC and the ESPN TV networks signed contracts to broadcast USFL games. That brought in additional cash that would eventually turn losses into profits if the business strategy was executed smartly. After his first season as team-owned ended, Trump decided to go for the NFL's jugular. So in 1984, Trump persuaded the other USFL owners to sue the NFL under the Sherman Antitrust Act, which makes it a felony to monopolize or attempt to monopolize any business. The suit was filed in October. It said the NFL shouldn't have had contracts with more than two of three television networks. The USFL couldn't get its games on air if it switched to a fall season, so the NFL must have had an unlawful monopoly of fall football. For the trial, Trump convinced the other USFL team owners to hire Harvey Meyerson, a litigator with no expertise in antitrust litigation. The judge handling the case wrote that Trump testified that he was offered an NFL franchise by Commissioner Pete Rozelle in exchange for his blocking the USFL's proposed move to the fall and his preventing the league from filing the instant action. Rizel denied that he had such an offer to Trump. The jury found that the NFL had indeed engaged in criminal behavior when the league willfully acquired or maintained monopoly power in a market consisting of Major League Professional Football in the United States. Feelings and net worth. Over more than four decades of promoting himself in public, Trump has declared widely varying figures for his net worth. In 1990, when Trump's business empire was on the verge of collapse, Trump told me and many other journalists that he was worth $3 billion. He told others $5 billion. I got my hand on a copy of his personal net worth statement that spring, which revealed a much smaller figure. 2 months later, a report commissioned by his bankers put Trump in red by almost $300 million. In spring 2015, he prepared to run for the Republican presidential nomination. Trump declared his net worth on different days to be $8.7 billion, $10 billion, and $11 billion. It's so important to him that he sued veteran journalist Tim O'Brien over a net worth estimate in his 2005 book, Trump Nation. O'Brien estimated Trump's worth at $150 million to $250 million, based on documents Trump had shown him and statements from three unnamed sources. The lawsuit accused O'Brien of deliberately undervaluing Trump's net worth so he could sell more books, causing irreparable damage to Trump's reputation as a billionaire. Empty boxes. In 1983, after shopping at Bulgari, Trump had a $50,000 necklace mailed to him at an out-of-state address. On another day, he bought jewelry that cost him $15,000. It too was mailed out-of-state to the notorious Roy Cohn. Both boxes were empty. Mailing empty boxes is a way to evade sales taxes on jewelry, furs, and other expensive items easily shipped through the mail. Under New York law, a visitor who buys goods and has them shipped to his or her home state doesn't have to pay New York sales tax. In theory, the buyers then owe an equivalent tax to their home state, known as a use tax, but the levy is only lightly enforced. Once New York sales tax auditors got privy to his scam, it was easy to find the tax evaders. They didn't have to comb through every individual receipt for the 28-month period, ending in March 1983, that the investigation covered. In its shipping logs, Bulgari had put an asterisk next to the name of every customer who received an empty box. Then, to save a little bit of money, Bulgari affixed only enough postage to cover the cost of mailing the empty box, not the weight of the jewelry. Myth maintenance. Trump relies on two core strategies to manage the public image he has spent decades creating, polishing, and selling. In the first, he exploits a common weakness of news reporting, recitation of facts without analysis of that which goes unsaid. Trump often threatens to sue journalists, ensuring caution from publishers and broadcasters who want to avoid a costly lawsuit. In his second core strategy, Trump distorts information, contradicts himself, and blocks inquiries into his conduct by journalists, law enforcement, business regulators, and other people's lawyers. Again, the report shows decades of Trump's skill in pursuing this strategy successfully. Together, these strategies, muddying the facts and deflecting inquiries into the past conduct, help ensure that Trump's carefully crafted public persona won't be unmade. He won't suffer the curtain to be pulled back to reveal a man who tricked society into thinking he was all-wise and all-powerful. An unpromising future. No book can capture the entire life of someone who has done half as much as Donald Trump has in his 70 years. What I've attempted to do here was to take my direct knowledge of Trump and the many thousands of pages of Trump documents I've collected in nearly half a century as an investigative reporter and focus on the aspects of Trump's conduct that I think are most important for voters to ponder before they cast their ballots in November 2016.